News Talk Zed Peterson, an interesting little query from Jan, who's written in to say, Jack, why are there no seagulls in Hawaii? Rude would probably know. It turns out that seagulls don't like the conditions in Hawaii because they can't feed when they're in the ocean. So you know how albatrosses and fairy terns and those sorts of things can bob about on the ocean and swim down and get fish? Well, apparently seagulls can't do that, and the coastline in Hawaii doesn't give the sort of scavenging conditions that apparently seagulls prefer. So although there are sometimes visiting seagulls in Hawaii, they don't have gulls everywhere like we do. Isn't that interesting? Thanks for that, Jan. I had no idea, but we've worked that out for you. Right now it's 10:45, and a very good morning to Mr. Bob Campbell, our master of wine.
Good morning, Jack.
Bob, we are focusing on New Zealand vintages and the vintage charts this morning. After a couple of weeks ago, I think a listener asked if there was any easy way to work out when and where it had been a good vintage. Because, of course, a good vintage for a certain sort of wine in Central Otago in New Zealand can be completely different to the vintage they might have experienced for wine on Waiheke or in Marlborough.
It really does pay to take a little bit of note of vintage. And for that reason, I've kept my own vintage chart going for quite a number of years now. So I did send you a copy of my vintage chart from 2001 to 2016.
Yeah.
And it covers all the main wine types. I don't know whether you can post it on your website, but it might be useful.
No,
to,
we will. It's comprehensive, Bob. It's a pretty amazing resource. How useful are vintage charts?
Well, if you have a choice of the same Hawke's Bay Red from, say, 2012 and 2013, you'd be wise to pick the later vintage, which some producers still describe as the best so far from that region. 2012, on the other hand, was a very difficult vintage that I scored only 3 points out of 10. So that's a sort of no-brainer. So that becomes a very useful piece of information between those two vintages, at least.
Yeah.
But that's an extreme example. It's worth cherry-picking through the vintage chart to spot vintages that might be worth avoiding. New Zealand's got far more good vintages than bad, so it's easier to isolate the difficult vintages rather than the top ones. In classic European regions like Bordeaux and Burgundy, wine prices go up in a good vintage and then down in a bad vintage. In this country, prices are fairly static from year to year, even though quality might vary significantly. And so the message to me is clear. Stock up on wines from a good vintage and avoid those from the lesser years.
Why is that, that the prices change?
Well, they just swing with the market, and the demand increases massively when it's a very, very good vintage for those classic wines from, I use the Bordeaux and Burgundy example. So the producers take the opportunity to take some extra cash, and then when times get tough, you know, when the wines are not nearly as good, they can afford to discount the regular price and keep sales moving, I guess.
Yeah, okay. And then having said all of that, some prestige labels might make wines during a really bad vintage.
Yeah, a good example of that would be like Tomata Colorain, one of our very top reds. They didn't make wine in the challenging 2012 Hawke's Bay, but so their second label, Awatea, received a shot in the arm by getting the grapes normally destined for its big brother.
Yeah.
Now, I haven't tasted the Tomata 2012 Awatea Cabernet Merlot, but it's quite conceivable that the wine from that vintage was better than usual.
Right. So I guess vintage charts are only a rough guide.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got a sort of healthy suspicion of vintage charts, even though I do use them myself, but because there are inevitably many exceptions to the ratings given. I was talking to a French winemaker recently who said he'd made some of his best wines in relatively poor vintages, and he told me that he tends to work harder in a tough year and become more complacent when conditions are easy, and he believes vintage charts are misleading, but I still think they offer a really useful guide for wine buyers, and they're helpful in identifying the highs and lows. That's the big thing.
Okay.
You can also get a situation where a region gets a drenching mid-harvest, and those that pick before the rain make brilliant wines, while those after the rain not so brilliant. So how does a single number, you know, do justice to a vintage like that? It's a hard thing to get across on a simple chart.
And
the golden rule in wine buying is try before you buy. Mistakes can happen in top vintages. Miracles can occur in poor years. It's worth remembering that too,
yeah.
I think.
And it's interesting, just to, I'm looking at your wine chart at the moment, and when you say a number, probably important to point out that it's very simple. I mean, even an idiot like me can work it out, because it's just a 1 to 10 number.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So you've basically said the Chardonnay in Canterbury might be a 7 one year, might be a 9 the next, might be a 5 the next.
That's exactly how it works.
Yeah. Have you chosen a favourite wine for us this week, Bob?
Yeah, my pick this week is Brightwater 2016 Lord Rutherford Sauvignon Blanc from Nelson. That's $25. It's got a typical sort of really punchy Sauvignon flavours with more weight and richness than many, and it might be hard to find, but listeners should be able to track it down if they use the Wine Searcher website.
Okay, no, that sounds great. Thank you very much, Bob. You have yourself a good weekend. And remember, Bob's website is bobcampbell.nz. We'll put Bob's wine chart up on newstalkzb.co.nz as well if you want to have a bit of a look. It's quite an interesting little read, actually. It's just gone 9 minutes to 11 on Newstalk ZB.